Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Arseholics podcast on a Wednesday evening. It's an unusual time for us recording on a Wednesday evening. I've just realized that my laptop charger's not plugged in, so I'll do that while speaking. It's unusual. We don't usually record on a Wednesday. We usually record on a Sunday after the game. We couldn't this week. And it's also just, you know, there's arguably, you know, the biggest game in Arsenal's calendar for the last couple of weeks was arguably the one that we didn't play in, which was yesterday, the Tottenham and Man City game, which we're going to talk a lot about. And I've got Myers to talk about it with me as we just kind of take stock on where we are before the final weekend of the season. So Myers, hello, mate. How's it going?
Hi, mate. Yeah, I'm good, man. Nice weather today, wasn't it? Yeah. Managed to get a couple of beers after work, which was nice, in the city. And spent a lot of my morning on Twitter, really, looking at Ange's comments and this kind of back and forth between Arsenal fans and Tottenham fans and, well, rival fans getting involved in this whole kind of debate around what would you do, what would you have done if it was that, you know, what would you do if it was Arsenal in that position that Spurs were in yesterday, which I thought was quite funny. But I thought Ange's comments were hilarious. And it's like this, like we were talking about in our fantasy football group, right? Like you mentioned, it's this cycle of Spurs manager comes in, optimism, gets to a certain period of time, 12 months in, 18 months in, and then realise that they're surrounded by a bunch of dickheads, basically. It starts to crumble, and I think we're starting to see the signs of Postecoglou doing the same, which is pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, look, fair play to Spurs though yesterday. In terms of the actual players, I think overall, I think they put in a good performance. I didn't expect it to be as tight as it was, even though it was a 2-0 game. I thought they restricted City quite well overall, but I thought City would be peppering them, and I just thought, you know, that high line that they normally play, they'd get opened up. But yeah, he changed it up a bit, didn't he? He moved Van de Ven left back and made a couple of tweaks and seemed to work. And I think it's just, I was saying to you guys in our group chat, the Arsenal group chat that we've got, like that Son chance, it's just replaying. It was replaying in my head all night last night. Just don't know how he's not just put that, like, just, yeah, just put it away, just slot it away. It wasn't a hard chance at all, but it is what it is. We are.
Yeah,
I'm
just going back to a bit on what you said. So you're right that I think Tottenham surprised a lot of people with how they played. I think lots of people thought that, most people thought City were going to win. Pretty much everyone thought City were going to get a result. But, you know, there were all those omens about the fact that City haven't got a good record at Tottenham, and the fact that Tottenham are a very attacking team and so would always look to score goals. And I think you're right, like, in that it obviously surprised everyone how they played. And I was thinking about this, and I think that this is probably what pissed Ange off the most at the end of the game, because he's obviously someone who has a certain philosophy and kind of goes with a similar kind of tactic and structure and whatever. And I think he basically yesterday approached the game in a way where he said, I really want to get a result today, and so I'm actually going to compromise on a few of my beliefs just in order to try and spring a surprise, to try and actually get a result. And he played a different system without a false nine, really was compact in that center. And it surprised everyone, clearly City, you know, included, and managed to, I mean, let's just assume that, you know, it had a part to play in this. It managed to kind of blunt City a bit and get them thrown off, and City weren't in their kind of fluent self. And I just felt like in the end of the game, Ange must have really felt that he did that. He set the team up in this way. He was so passionate to try and get Champions League football. He knew what was on the line.
Yeah.
And he had a fan base who didn't care. Like, they didn't care. Like, there was so much apathy in the stadium. There was, like, you know, even the fans who you know, kind of made the effort to not be anti-Spurs in the ground weren't really pro Spurs. Like, they were just sort of mumbling and yeah, okay, cool, whatever. And I think he probably looked at the end of the game and he thought, if we had our fans the way that they have been, we could have won today. And then we could have gone on the weekend and beaten Sheffield United, and Villa could very easily lose to Palace, and then we're in the Champions League. And this is the thing, man. Like, Ange doesn't care about the rivalries of the club more than he cares about competing in the Champions League, because he's not... How long is he going to be at Spurs? That's not in his control. This is a big job for him. How many chances may he get to be in the Champions League? And he knows. He doesn't seem like a dumb guy at all. He knows that if he's going to be in the Champions League, he's going to get more money to spend. Better players are going to come. He can do the tactics and his philosophies in a much more effective way with better players. The guy knows that not being in the Champions League is a massive challenge for him to do the things that he wants to do and potentially for him to stay in a job. So I'm not surprised he flipped, man. I mean, it was so interesting, wasn't it? Just the way he looked in that press conference.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's a good, And the point you made about the fans, I mean, it was like, we've been to Tottenham away the last couple of years, and we know, I know that's for a North London derby. We know, and I say this, not really wanting to say it and not really wanting to give Spurs praise, but as a fan, in terms of a home ground atmosphere, they can be loud. They can really get behind the team, and it can be quite, I'd say, an intimidating atmosphere. I think we saw it when we went there a couple of seasons ago and we lost 3-0 in that Champions League chase when it was us and Spurs and ended up finishing fifth. And that game, I feel like the atmosphere really did kind of help dictate the result. And so, watching yesterday, it was maybe not silent, but it was quiet for the whole game until they went 2-0 down. And then all of a sudden the chants came out pretty much mocking Arsenal, which was, again, just a bit ridiculous. But I think, you know, everything you said about Ange, completely agree. And I mean, look, as a fan, I think I do get it, right? Because I think if it was the other way around, I don't know, what do you reckon? If it was the other way around, you've reversed the roles. What would you want to happen if it was us and Spurs were going for the title?
Genuinely, if I had time to really think about it, I was thinking about this the other day. I think my rational mind would kick in and think, it's really annoying, the idea of Spurs winning the league. That is really annoying. But not being in the Champions League is a huge issue. Like, there is no guarantees you're going to get there the next season. It's not this whole, we'll just go again next season. There are so many other clubs who are going to be strengthening, who are going to be, you know, on your tail. There's no guarantee. So I think I would say, if it was genuine that Arsenal would have a chance of qualifying for the Champions League, and, you know, it was make or break. So either you qualify for the Champions League and Spurs win the title, or you don't qualify for the Champions League and Spurs don't win the title. I think if I was in the situation Spurs are in, where it is really important, like to be in the Champions League, I would want that, because the only way that Spurs are going to be able to get to the level of Arsenal and City is if they are in the Champions League. That's the only way, right? So I genuinely think that I would go, it really sucks, the idea of Tottenham winning the league. It really, really sucks. But I want us to be playing in the Champions League. I think that's what it would be. But it is difficult. What about you? What do you think?
I think... I think if I was at the ground and we had a game against City, I would still sort of cheer the team on to try and win the game, as you normally would for any game that we go to. But I think... Oh, that's a bit of a dilemma, isn't it? I mean, to be honest, I'm not sure, man, because I think, I don't know, Spurs winning a league title doesn't necessarily mean... It doesn't necessarily mean much, as it's potentially a one-off kind of achievement, right? It doesn't necessarily mean they go in a period of dominance and go and win the league a number of times and they finish above us and all the rest of it. So you could probably stomach it. But at the same time, I think where we are now, if we didn't finish in the top four and we missed out, but it also meant Spurs didn't win the league, I'd be fairly confident that we could go get back in there next, getting back into the top four, say next season. But if you go back a few years and when we were dying and crying out for Champions League football, when we weren't in it for the 6 or 7 years that we weren't in it, then maybe my opinion would be a bit different. But I think the fact that we've got a taste of it this season, and we've been back in it this season, and just how strong we look and how kind of as a team, we're obviously in the top two consistently. I feel like with the squad that we've got, we'd probably be back in it. So I'd maybe sort of take the option of Spurs not winning it and us not get being in the Champions League next season. But yeah, like I don't know, that the only thing that I just couldn't really get my head around is how you can turn up to a game as a fan and not cheer the team, like despite all of this talk beforehand and all the banter and everything. At the end of the day, once you go into the stadium, it's a very different like feeling. It's a very different, you know, you're turning up to support your team, and that's the bit I was a bit confused about. And like even Ange having a go at that fan behind the dugout, like obviously he said something, whatever that was, and like that kind of behaviour, is a bit weird to be honest, but. Yeah,
the fans are interesting, right, aren't they? Because this isn't really me trying to have a dig, but I feel like they are a fairly unique club because, in a very positive way, like you know, as a compliment to them, they obviously like have built themselves up to be quite a rich club, like a big stadium, like everything about their infrastructure and. Yeah, I guess you know the types of managers that they attract, even to some extent, some of the players that they attract. They are quite a big club, right? When you look at those things, right? But obviously they've not won anything. They're not a team that's consistently in the Champions League. They're not in this like echelon of teams, which is kind of, you know, has a history of winning trophies or you know, actively competes for trophies all the time. But their fans end up kind of being in this really weird place, I think, where on one hand, they sort of behave like a big club and they try and expect them to win all the time, etc. But then on the other hand, they sort of feel like they can come out and be like, yeah, actually not finishing the Champions League, it's not that big a deal because, you know, we just don't want Arsenal to win the league. And it's just a bit odd because that feels like such small club mentality when you are a club like them who don't have, you know, lots of history to fall back on and they're not necessarily, you know, like you made the example when you talked about Arsenal situation. The reason why perhaps, you know, you're comfortable saying what you said about, you know, Arsenal is like the point you made, which is that we're sort of in a situation where the squad is pretty good. Like the everything is sort of in place where you would think, okay, we probably have genuinely a very good go at top four again the next season. But I guarantee you Spurs fans will complain if they're not signing top players this summer, if they're not getting their targets. And this is the thing, right? Like if you are a Spurs fan who basically said, look, I'd rather Arsenal didn't win the league than us finish the top four, fine. But you also then have no right to complain about anything that ends up happening in the summer transfer window. You have no right to say, why didn't we go buy this player or that player? And why didn't we compete for that guy or that this guy? What, you can't say that. You can't do it because you can't have both those things. And that's the thing that I think is a little bit confusing about them. They, you know, they want to be the big club in some ways, but they don't want to behave in as a big club in other ways. And, you know, it is a strange one. But look, the Ange thing, I mean, just to talk about the Ange thing a little bit more, because I think it is super interesting that why is it about managers that you think that, you know, they kind of take the job and after 1 or 2 years, there is this like moment of realization, like, what is it that they realize before?
Maybe now there's a few examples of what happened with Conte, what happened with Mourinho, but I think if you go back a few years and on the face of it, if you're a foreign manager coming in, I guess you're not going to have that much insight into kind of, you know, they're a big club, but they're not a United, a Liverpool, Arsenal, even a Chelsea, to be honest, even a Newcastle. Like, I think when you think about all of those clubs, even like Villa, you think about all those clubs, there's probably certain attributes, maybe certain kind of parts of their history, certain things that you associate with each of those clubs, and maybe they're just well known around the world, right? Whereas with Tottenham, they just don't, there's no European presence. There's never really been a European presence. And they're sort of on this, like, on that kind of, like, they're kind of a big club, but they're also not really a big club. Like, they're a big club in terms of they're in London. They're obviously signed big players. They tend to attract decent managers. They've obviously got a really big stadium now, but at the same time, like you said, they've not really achieved anything. They haven't won a league title in, is it, how many years are we talking? 40, 50, 60 years, whatever it is. So I think maybe it's just a case of a lot of managers go in there a little bit, just going into the unknown a little bit. And I guess also maybe there's maybe the Levy factor as well. Like, it feels like he's kind of steered the club really well. It maybe you could say financially, I don't know, but obviously, like, again, the new stadium, some of the big sales that they've made, like, they've obviously recouped a lot of money for certain players. And they've always kind of, they've gone from being what you'd probably call a mid-table team in the 90s, from what I remember, to now being generally challenging for top four. But I guess if you're working for Levy and he's putting these restrictions on you, which it sounds like he has done with previous managers, maybe that's just a tough environment to work under, and you don't really know that, you don't really know what the environment's going to be like until you're in the door. Well, I don't know, man. Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one. I don't know if there's, like, yeah, I don't know if there's, I don't know what the reason is for that pattern. But yeah, I mean, look, if you look at the sort of you look at their squad, right, and you look at some of the players that they've had, obviously they lost Kane last year or this summer, just gone. They've got some good players, but really, if you look across their team, do they have anyone that's like, do they have any real world-class players?
They think, like, they do, but no.
Yeah, and maybe there's just maybe it's just a case they've got a pretty decent squad with a couple of good players. Like, I'm thinking of Son, I'm thinking of maybe Van de Ven, but, you know, they are a kind of fifth, sixth place squad at the moment. And I don't know, man. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's just one that some, like, you know, I guess Spurs fans would have a much better idea as to what kind of what it is and what the pattern is. Like, I think also the managers that they've had problems with in the past, when you think of their kind of personalities, right? Like, Conte's a winner, Mourinho's a winner. These are guys that are used to genuinely winning at the top, you know, winning the big prizes. They've won in Europe, they've won domestically, both of them have won the Premier League. They go into a club like Tottenham, and genuinely Tottenham are a club that probably are happy to finish top four every season for now, you know, and they probably are happy to get that Champions League money and maybe go on a decent cup run here and there. And maybe after a period of time, those sorts of managers with that, like, elite kind of, like, this is where I want to take the club, this is what I want to achieve, with that mentality, maybe it's just not a match. It's not just not a good match. Maybe it just comes down to that.
But perhaps it is, because, like, with the other managers, the Mourinho's and Conte's, etc. Like, I can imagine that, yeah, at some point maybe it gets that thing where they're like, all right, well, now we're going to kick on, right? And then Levy goes, well, I'm not sure. Like, you know, I can give you all this money to do all these things. We're going to have to wait it out a little bit longer and blah, blah, blah. And I'm sure those managers have turned around and gone, no, look at the clubs above us. They have got way better players. We need to buy da, 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 da. And I bet Levy turns around and goes, well, you just spent like 50 million on this guy and 40 million on this guy. And they go, yeah, but you need more. And I wonder if Levy then goes, well, I'm not sure. And then that's where these kind of moments happen, where Conte, certainly it feels like something like that happened. Because you remember with Conte's outburst, it was very much like, very directed at the ownership and Levy, as opposed to kind of anything else. And the bit that I guess was interesting with Ange's thing, right, where obviously there was an element of him that he was talking about the fans, but it just felt like there was something more as well, you know, because he was like, the way he just was talking about certain things, you know, over the last 48 hours, inside, outside the club. And it was more than just the fans thing. It felt like something else. And I was wondering, like, what could have happened? Like, surely there couldn't have been a conversation with Levy at this point to sort of say, yeah, you know, I really want to make sure we finish top four. And I'm sure Levy didn't say to him, nah, don't worry about it. Like, you know, it's all good. I'm sure he didn't say that. I'm sure they didn't have like a transfer fund, you know, fees conversation. I'm sure it was. So I'm just really, I'm really intrigued as to what it could be and where it goes from here, to be honest, right? Where does it go from here? Like what is Ange thinking in his mind? Because, you know, he seems like a sort of guy who, you know, would want to kind of stick around and all that kind of stuff. And he doesn't have that big reputation that the other kind of few former managers that we mentioned had.
Yeah.
But in this kind of environment where there's a lot of clubs looking for managers. Yeah. Like, I don't know, you know, if one of these other clubs gives him the call, I don't know, you know,
I think the flip side to that is you could argue that Spurs is probably, but Spurs is possibly kind of the biggest job that he's going to get anytime soon. And I guess we don't know, because like you say, anything could change fairly quickly. You think of Man United and the position they're in, and, you know, Ten Hag could go this year or pretty soon. So there could be opportunities available, but I sort of look at Ange and think where his path up to now, it feels like Spurs is like the job that he needs to prove himself. And then the other openings come, or the other opportunities come around Europe. And he's not like, he's probably done he's done a decent job this season, but equally like this little patch of form that they've had. I mean, to be honest, their form half of the season, like this calendar year, has been terrible. Where they were in such a strong position at the start of the season, and for whatever reason it's tailed off, and you know, there's questions there. So I think that's probably something in his mind as well, like even with all these comments that he's making, and it sounds like, oh, is there trouble brewing, are there problems behind the scenes, has he had a fallout with Levy or whatever it might be. I think also he must be aware that he's not really, like I said, he's not really proved himself yet, right? He's not really done anything to say, okay, if the United job comes around, or if the Chelsea job comes around, or whoever else it might be, the Newcastle job comes around, that I don't know if those clubs will necessarily look at him and say he's our guy just yet. And that is probably, you know, he's similar to Arteta in terms of it's a project, right? Can clearly see that it's a longer term project, and I think he's going to need a few years to make it work. And I think if he were to walk away now, for example, I don't know, is he going to get another kind of top four, top five Premier League job anytime soon? Not sure. And I think also, like, you've got to think he's been exposed tactically, right? Like, he's very clearly been exposed tactically, and it's literally taken up until the 37th game. Or sorry, was it yesterday? 37th game for him to try something different, especially defensively. So, yeah.
Yeah, everything you said is fair. Like, I wonder whether his age as well is sort of a factor, where he's recognizing that he perhaps doesn't have that many more jobs left, right? And like you say, I actually agree with you thinking about it. Like, he probably does really need to prove himself here at Spurs, and it's not as kind of simple as perhaps, you know, another club just taking the punt on him, because he doesn't necessarily have that CV of being at kind of the big clubs. I mean, you could then argue that, you know, a younger manager like Arteta didn't either. But I think he's probably looking at it, I imagine, and thinking that this is a big opportunity for him. And he feels confident in what he could achieve if they backed him. And if they perhaps, you know, even as a fan base, as a kind of, you know, the owners, etc., if they really, really all were on the same page, he probably feels like he could do something. And I'm on, you know, he might feel like he doesn't have that many bites of the cherry. So I don't know if it was just kind of a sobering moment sort of all around for him. But anyway, look, it'll be really interesting to see where it goes. I mean, look, just to kind of reflect a little bit, that Son chance, you know, loads of people have talked about it as one of sort of the sort of defining moments of the Premier League season, but also one of the most defining moments of any sort of title race. Like, literally that one-on-one in the penultimate game of the season could have decided the title, basically. And it sounds really sensationalist to say that. And I don't always like looking at things like that, because you never know what would have happened. He could score that goal and then City could come and score afterwards. There was 10 minutes of added time afterwards anyway. Like, loads of things can happen. But it felt like time stood still on that one-on-one, didn't it? It was the most weird feeling. Like, when you saw him going through,
yeah,
what did you think was going to happen?
Mate. So I was in the pub watching with my brother-in-law and a mate. So my friend is a Liverpool fan. Brother-in-law is a West Ham fan. I was actually sitting in the middle. They were either side. I think it's Akanji makes a mistake, is it? I can't remember who gets caught in the ball.
I think so, yeah.
And Son nicks it off him and obviously he's running through on goal. And I literally just grabbed, like, it was one of those where it was like I had eyes glued to the TV, grabbed them both, like just put my hat, like I said, it sounds a bit weird, put my hands on both of them. Yeah. And just waiting for him to just slot it away. And I mean, yeah, mate, like you say, who knows what happens if he does, what happens after that if he does score? You're right. There's every chance that you go back up the other end and go and get a winner, because they had to win yesterday, right? So who knows what would have happened, but I don't know. Like it feels like Son of previous seasons, he used to take those sorts of chances so often. Like I feel like he's generally a good finisher. I don't watch Spurs enough to know how many chances he misses or anything, but it feels like when he's one-on-one, when he's in those situations, he's generally pretty clinical. And God knows what's gone through his mind, but it's just a pretty poor finish. I know everyone's raving about Ortega saving it, but if you think about it, Son makes it quite easy for him. Like,
yeah, I agree.
You know, wherever you're going to put it, he's not really smashed it. He's not placed it. He's hit it pretty close to the keeper. Ortega's not kind of really had to necessarily do anything. Like, he's not had to go make himself big. He's not had to dive to his feet. He's not, you know, he's there and Son hits it. And it's a relatively comfortable save. And like you were saying, when we were chatting about it, there is that, when you look at it from behind, you can really clearly see near post, just, yeah, right foot. You can just put it, to the keeper's left and it's in. And he doesn't do anything, really, does it? He doesn't hit, like I said, no power, no precision. It's just a pretty poor finish.
No, it's like what you said. Like, Son is... there's a few players in the world where, you know, they are just one-on-one, like, pros. Like, there's loads of them. Like, and, you know, Spurs were really lucky over the last few years to have Kane and Son, who are both just phenomenal one-on-ones.
Yeah.
And I think with those players who are really good at the one-on-ones, they're so good at very quickly either noticing a gap and two, reading the body weight distribution of the goalkeeper. And when you look at that camera view behind Son, it's like crushing, because not only do you see the big gap in the near post, which he obviously would be able to see because that's his pedigree, but you can also see the keeper, he's putting his weight as if he is going to dive across the goal. Mm. Like, the keeper's decided, okay, like, as soon as he kicks it, I'm going to make sure I can stretch myself as far as I can. So Son is the sort of player that would notice that. Do you know what I mean? Like, he should have noticed that. He's that good. And then you think he did exactly... You could probably even argue if he just kicks it straight, it probably goes in between the keeper's legs, right? Like, he probably nutmegs the keeper. He almost just hit it exactly where the keeper was hoping to go. And I'm not saying there's anything untoward about it. Like, I don't think it was like that. It's just bizarre and just annoying. And, like, you know, I mean, I guess it is what it is. And Charles is here in the comments telling us about how he's not dwelling on the chance. And makes a point that a similar thing might happen for Mikel Antonio over the weekend and the title race is not over. I mean, he's true. It's true, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the title race is not over. I mean, we can talk about Sunday, I guess, as in Sunday coming up. If you want to move on to that, should we talk about
it? Yeah, we should, because where does that leave us, Mike? So that leaves us in a situation where ultimately, if Man City win, then Man City win the league. And it's as simple as that. And if Arsenal win, and if Man City draw, then it's on goal difference and we win, right?
Yeah.
And obviously if Man City lose and Arsenal win, then Arsenal win the league. Everyone is expecting Man City to beat West Ham, and I think I agree. Like, there's no reason why you would not think that. The only thing is, it is the final day of the season. The final day of the season can be a bit weird. Historically, like, when the title race has gone down to the final day, generally speaking, it does end up with the team who are on top. But, like, it doesn't mean it's always smooth, right? Like, I mean, I know this is a different City team who, just this machine. I get that. But, and I'm just going to throw these factors out at you, and you tell me whether you think it's all nonsense and whatever, because some of this might be nonsense, but I'm going to try and cheer you up. But at the end of the day, firstly, West Ham did beat us 2-0 at home. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not utterly incapable of beating a incredibly good team away from home. It's David Moyes' last game. Yeah. It's his last thing. He is the sort of manager who would have been so pissed off that after the Tottenham City game, everyone was talking like City had won the league. He's a sort of guy.
Did you hear his comments? I think after the last game they played.
City under 14 is still be hard to beat. Yeah.
Tongue in cheek, but equally, yeah. I mean, it does sound like he's pretty happy to turn up for a bit of a, just a bit of a day out type of thing. But yeah, anyway, carry on with your facts.
But no, perhaps there's not that much. There's not that much more to it aside from the fact that you've got a team that basically have got nothing to lose in West Ham. They've got nothing to lose, but everything to gain, because it's the final day of the season. Everyone around the world is watching. It's your manager's last game. Many of these players have the chance genuinely to kind of be part of history, right? It's like the QPR City game that, when City won the title in that Aguero moment. Everyone just thought Man City were going to batter QPR, right?
Mm.
That didn't happen. And everyone talks about that game to this day. Everyone talks about that game. Highlights of that game are always still on. Like, I don't think that's lost on players. Like, I don't think those West Ham players, it's lost on them that they could be part of an incredibly significant moment in the Premier League. And so those little things, like, I wonder whether, they could play a part in this. Right, go to you. And obviously David Moyes and Arteta, they love each other. So
Yeah, that's another factor. I mean, look, I go into Sunday... I don't hold much hope. Like, if I had to quantify it or put a percentage against it, I'd probably say I'm going in with 5% hope, which is maybe even a bit. I'm being generous. The thing that you're right, there is this final day kind of who knows what could potentially happen, and there's there's always a bit of unpredictability in some ways with things that things can happen that you don't expect, but. Look, I mean, if we're just going by, you mentioned West Ham beat us 2-0 earlier in the season. I mean, I guess the counter to that is City are just City, right? They're just super strong.
I thought you were going to say that we beat them 6-0.
Oh, yeah, that as well. And West Ham, I mean, look, maybe try and be a bit positive, right? The positives or the things that maybe kind of give me that 5% hope is, I would say, number one, their front three. Well, I say their front three. They're kind of three attacking players of Bowen, Paqueta and Kudus are a genuine top six. I think I said this before. It's a genuine top six, kind of level of attacking, an attacking trio. They don't have, I mean, Antonio's Antonio and he can do a job and all the rest of it, but he's Antonio. He's not. At the same level. But I think basically, I guess the point I'm trying to make is they have players that can or could cause City problems. Mm-hmm. They have a pretty decent kind of defense. I think they've probably conceded a shitload of goals this season. But equally, I think that they've potentially got a defense that could hold City for a period of time. But I think, when you talk about the whole game, and it's probably going to be a game where City do have all of the ball and they are going to be putting the pressure on, and they are probably going to create chances. I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm just not sure West Ham have got any chance of keeping a clean sheet or keeping it down to sort of
less than a couple of goals. So I guess what I'm trying to say is they're like, anything can happen. There is a chance, and they have got dangerous attacking players that could cause City problems. But I find it really hard to hold on to that. And I think also, like, I'd rather just go into Sunday. Like, I'd rather just turn up to the game on Sunday with you guys and just sort of be like, let's just have a couple of drinks. Let's just, hopefully it's a nice day. Hopefully it's like sunny, whatever. Like, let's just enjoy it, because it's been, let's just enjoy the match that we've got and kind of make sure that we do our job first and foremost, make sure we beat Everton. Because I don't think, and Aaron was saying this, I saw Aaron the other day when we went to watch the United game. And, you know, he was kind of like, this is before United. He was like, out of these two games we've got, he's more concerned about beating Everton than he was about the United game. And his kind of reasoning for that was around, you know, Everton have been pretty good recently, form-wise, defensively. They're kind of, you know, they've got, I think they'd not be really conceding loads of goals. And they might be quite tough to break down. So, you know, I think from our perspective, I just want to turn up on Sunday. And like I said, have a couple of drinks with you guys, enjoy it, and hope that we kind of get an early goal and we go and smash Everton and have a nice result. And I guess it's one of those, let's see what happens at the Etihad. But I mean, mate, I find it very hard to hold on to any sort of hope that West Ham can do something and do us a favour. It feels like for all the reasons you gave about Moyes and about his last game and everything else you said, yeah, fair enough. But also, like, only thing that the overriding kind of thing in my head is it's Man City, and they're just a machine, as we keep saying. And I can't see them slipping up, and especially the fact they've been in this position before, right? I know that Villa game, last game of the season a few years ago, like, I think they were 2-0 down at halftime when it was between them and Liverpool, and they obviously came back, and I think it was Gundogan and all the rest of it. But like, they've been in this position before. I think they know what it takes. I think they know how to approach the game. Like I said before, they're going to have all of the ball. So even if they don't score in the first half, kind of like what happened against Tottenham, they weren't really dominant against Tottenham, but you always felt they were going to score at some point. And I think especially at home, you know, if one goes in, are West Ham really that bothered? Like, do West Ham really need to put in? You know, if something comes their way, something comes their way. But they're not, you know, I don't see them kind of going into 50-50s. I don't really see them, you know, I think they'll just probably see what happens. And if something comes their way, like if chances come their way or set pieces from Ward-Prowse, that kind of thing, then yeah, great. But otherwise, I don't really see them going 100% to try and win that game or even draw it, because they just don't need to, right? So,
yeah, I fully agree. fully agree. I mean, like, all the reasons I gave you, I don't genuinely think they're going to make a difference. And I think, let's call it 5% chance that West Ham have got to get a result, I think is completely contingent on them scoring first. If they score first, still, the chances are City are going to come back, don't get me wrong. But at least you can then sort of play on the counter. And I think if they do score first, there'll probably be that element where they will feel like, oh, well, like, you know, we've got something to play for this game. So even if City equalised, they would still keep going for it. But I agree with you. If Man City scored first, they're just going to keep the ball. And then if you're West Ham, like, yeah, at that point you're going, do you know what, the season's about to be over. Can I really be bothered to chase shadows? Like, 100%. It's done, like, whatever. Yeah, like, I agree. So you know, I anchor back to what you said, to be honest, mate. Like, you know, I think we should have a fun day and reflect and be happy and you know, all the rest of that, because it, you know, it has been a tremendous season, and particularly a second half of the season. You know, it's been about as good as a second half of the season can be. You know, it's in, I think in Arsenal's history, I don't think we've ever had a better second half of the season than we've had, you know, in terms of total points accumulated. So, like, it is ridiculous. Like, no one thought we would win this many games, like, in this run in. Yeah. When they kind of had the whole 12 games each, you know, or whatever it was, when they showed the, you know, the columns of Liverpool, Man City and Arsenal. I mean, no one, if you had said to anyone, yeah, at that point, you know, when they started doing those kind of graphics, if you had said to any of those pundits, okay, Arsenal will get this many points, yeah, the pundits probably at that point would have gone like, if they get that many points, they'll win the league.
Yeah, fair.
Even City being City, like the fact is, like, what we have done is what is basically sort of City behavior. We just like, kind of, you know. So anyway, like, I think we should respect that. It's hard. Like, sometimes I've got myself into a little bit of a funk. I don't know about you, about like looking at that period of games in sort of November, December, I think it was, right? You know, that the yeah. period where, you know, we just lost to West Ham and then lost to Fulham and lost to Newcastle and lost to Villa, like, you know, that whole kind of period of whatever, and getting into that. But I mean, how do you feel? Like, do you feel a sense of regret, or do you think that whole experience is what made us the team that we were in the second half?
Yeah, I think the latter. I think, I mean, look, even if you look at the numbers, I think I saw a stat. It's not a stat, but it's just points that teams accumulated in the first half of the season and versus the second half. And obviously our second half of the season has been unreal. And I think City, I think in the first half of the season, I think us and City had got the same number of points. And I think it was Liverpool who had got a couple more. And then in the second half of the season so far, obviously Liverpool have fallen off, but then it's basically been us and City, and City have got a couple more points than us. And I think that's probably down to the loss against Villa. So basically it indicates that in terms of, I guess, what you'd expect through a 38 game season, we've basically matched City, and it's literally been the tiniest of margin, right? Like one result. And yeah, you could maybe pinpoint it down to the Villa game, the West Ham game, the Fulham games, or Villa games as well. But, you know, or the Newcastle away game, like, you could pinpoint it down to even drawing to Tottenham at home, that Jorginho mistake. Like, you could pinpoint it down to that. But I think also, like, there's been certain moments where, maybe not that many, but even when I think of Anfield away, like that Ødegaard handball, right? I don't know if you remember it. Mm-hmm. That was an obvious handball, and we got pretty lucky that we didn't get. They didn't give a penalty for that, and I don't know how they didn't give a penalty for that. And also when Trent's through, and it's like 5-on-1, like, it's basically everyone on Declan Rice, and he, I think he hits the bar. I think it was Trent. It was Trent, wasn't it? That breakaway. Yeah. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah.
There's moments, right? So there's moments in a season that happen, but I think when you look at the overall season, yeah, there's been a couple of games where you could say, ah, if we only we'd won that. But then you can always flip it and say, well, if Declan Rice doesn't get a last-minute winner at Luton, then we draw that game. If Kai Havertz doesn't get a last-minute winner at Brentford, then we draw that game. Like, you know, there's just... So...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I think it's just, you know, swings and roundabouts to a certain extent. But I think what it tells us, I think it's another year of very, very solid and impressive progression. And I think it also shows how close we've come and what there is left to do to kind of bridge the gap. And it's really frustrating. It's really, really fucking, like, hard to kind of stomach, and watching City do what they've done the last few games. Like, we've been unreal since January, but then so have City. And it, you know, you have this, I don't know if you've had this, but you start to, like, what Liverpool have had to do in the last few seasons, maybe not, obviously not last season, but prior to that, when they were that good and they were matching City and they got to 90 plus points and they didn't win a league title, like, you do start to feel like, oh, okay, I kind of see what these Liverpool fans were going on about, in terms of they were unreal, but they still weren't good enough to win the league. But luckily, I know they won it once. I know they won the Champions League once, but do you know what I mean? Like, those four or five seasons, it must have been really, really tough. It must have been really, really tough to watch that and kind of go season after season and only get one Premier League out of it. So I just hope that, I think the thing is, mate, where Arsenal are, like, everything's set up where we've got, it feels like everything's in place for us to win a league title in the next few seasons. And I think we'll go again, you know, we'll obviously strengthen in the summer,
like we did last summer, very clearly identified what we needed, and pretty much every signing's worked out. You know, Timber's been injured, but other than that, every signing has worked out. And you'd probably say, in hindsight now, looking back, even though there were question marks over Raya, even though there were question marks over Havertz, and obviously Declan Rice, was, you know, we knew that was going to work out, but we've invested really, really well. Squad's at prime age, perfect age to go into the next few seasons. Managers kind of learning and improving every season. You've got to think that there's a title on the way in the next few years. And I think that's the thing that I'm probably holding on to, like, as hard as this is to watch and as hard as this is to kind of sort of think about how close we're going to get. You know, we're going to probably get to Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening and be like, shit, we've lost it by, what is it, 2 points?
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be tough, and it's tough now. But I think if you're an Arsenal fan, I think you've probably got, well, we have. We've got a lot to be optimistic about. There's a lot to kind of get behind, I guess you could say. And yeah, like, I think, you know, look, if Pep leaves in the next couple of seasons as well, which is what we're all hoping, like, if he just wins one more Champions League next season, which obviously we don't want him to do because we'll be in it as well. But if they win one more Champions League next season, and let's just say they, whatever happens in the league, but, you know, if he just goes, as City will still be fantastic, right? They'll obviously still buy the best players. They'll still spend the money, but they won't be at this ridiculous level that they've been at. Like, they won't, there's no way that they maintain that kind of 90 point level season after season and going far in all the other competitions and winning a Champions League. Like, that, I just can't see that happening, because I think Pep is genuinely, despite all the money and the allegations and the 115 charges, like, Pep genuinely is, like, I don't think there's any questions about him being the best coach in the world. So I'm kind of looking at it. Yeah. Like I said, I'm looking at it where I just feel like we're only going to get better. We're only going to strengthen. Arteta's going to get better. So I think I'm basing my faith on that. And I think also I'm kind of more hopeful than anything that Pep just gets a bit bored or wants a break, whatever it is. And he ends up moving on to something else, and that kind of opens up the field a bit for us and maybe some other teams to make it a bit more competitive. And yeah, maybe gives us the chance there. But it's hard, man. It's really hard. Like, and this is what I'm saying, like, being a Liverpool fan for that period of time, I mean, fair play to them. They got a league title out of it. But you could argue that they probably, if it weren't for City, they'd probably win 3 or 4 just for how good they were. Yeah, what do you think?
Similar. I think, you know, on one hand, I look at stuff like that and think, well, Liverpool probably ended up being as good as they were because City was so good, and it pushes you to that kind of level. And you could say that therefore it's the same for us. You know, we've become a really good team because City have set this, like, extraordinarily high benchmark. But it is really tough, man. It was really tough for Liverpool, and it's tough for us now. And I do hope, I think, you know, on that point, that however long this Arteta era, if you like, lasts, whether that's 3 years or 10 years or whatever it is, like, you really hope that in that period there's stuff to show for it. And that's not me saying it's like a failure if there isn't. It's just more that it is a genuinely great project, and it's proven to be a great project already. And you just hope that the margins in one season or two seasons go our way at least, and then you have something to show for it. Therefore, when the good times go, you know, and maybe we have our next rebuild and, like, you know, we drop off, at least you can look back and go, kind of like Liverpool fans can look back on now. Like, Liverpool fans probably look at the slot era coming up and probably think, or it might be quite tough, but do you know what? At least we have won a Premier League recently and a Champions League recently. At least you've got that. So, you know, I'd sort of really love us to be in that situation. And it, you know, and if we do focus on the here and now, like I think that, you know, you've been doing, we are, like you say, in a great position. The recruitment, like, as you mentioned, has been so good. It's so hard to think of a bad signing. It's so hard to think of it. Like, when you scratch your head and you think about it in the kind of recent, you know, four windows or so, you think about stuff, you could probably go, is Fabio Vieira a bad signing? And that's purely because the amount of minutes he's had hasn't been very good. It's not because when he's come on the pitch, he's looked a disaster. Like, you know, that we've not had that. You know, we've had question marks over Kivior, but he's been really important this season. And, you know, he's played a lot of minutes in the best defence in the league. So how can you say that? So we're just getting it right. Trossard for 20 odd million. Like, that's ridiculous now. And you sort of then look at it and you go, that's probably a combination of really good recruitment and really good coaching, because maybe some of those players under different coaches don't end up looking as good. And it just gives me so much confidence this window, because you know that the Kroenkes are going to go, right, well, we've proven it. Like, we've proven we know what we're doing in terms of recruitment. We've proven that the team's getting better. They'll say, look, within reason, we will back you.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of like confidence there. And you think, if you're any player in Europe, like, surely you're looking at this project and you're going, that's where I want to go. Like, you want to play in a team with Saliba and Gabriel at the back. You want to play in a team with Declan Rice. You want to play in a team with Odegaard. You want to play for Mikel Arteta. You want to be in London competing for the Premier League title and the Champions League with a genuinely young squad that's getting better. Like, it's not, and it's not a flash in the pan. You know, the progression's been that way. So I'm so excited in that I feel that Arteta will look at it now and go, okay, what do I need to do to take us to that next level? And again, he might not be able to do all of it in this window, but as much as possible. And I think goes there. And I think if he's got his targets, I think he probably gets those targets, to be honest, right? As long as they're, you know, for sale type thing, right? Like, I think he gets who he wants, basically, is what I'm saying, you know? And I don't mean like people who just obviously are not for sale. I'm not saying he's going to get Mbappe, he's going to get Vinicius Junior. I don't mean that stuff, you know? But if there is someone who a club is willing to sell, I think he gets that player.
Yeah. He's earned the backing, right? Like the point you made about Postecoglou earlier, you know, and Levy, it's essentially the opposite now, right? Like Arteta can demonstrate the progress. We know how far we off City when you look at it statistically, you look at the points, you look at the goals scored, for example, like everything. And you look at the last 4 years of the project, you can see the trajectory, you can see what we've done. So I think he's, you know, there's the board, the owners, they're going to have absolute faith that, yeah, if we put another 100 million in for him to go and sign the striker that he wants, I'm not saying we're going to buy a striker, but you know what I mean? Like we did with Declan Rice and buying a new midfielder. I don't think they'll have too many. Yeah, I don't, there's very little reason for them to question that level of investment. If they want to see the fruits of it, and they want to see silverware and trophies and Arsenal getting back to where we used to be. So yeah, like I completely agree, man. Like there's a lot to be excited about, right? There's a lot to be excited about. And we're just gonna have to go again next season. But I think equally, like Arteta is the guy to do that. I feel like he is, you know, he must be desperate. He must be absolutely desperate to win something big as part of this project and with Arsenal. And so I think he's got the drive, and you've got these players that are genuinely approaching their peak. Like some of them are not even actually really near their peak. When you think about Saka, like assuming Saka doesn't get kicked out, like assuming Saka's career lasts as long as it should. The only question around that is, you know, yeah, like if he just gets kicked every game for the next few years, his career might end up being a bit shorter than it should. But, you know, like basically, I guess the point I'm trying to make is all of these players at this kind of 22, 23, 24 age, they must be, again, similar. Like they must be absolutely desperate to win something. And I think with that close, I don't think it's a case of they're going to feel like, it's not like the back end of the Wenger area where we had these really good players like Nasri and Clichy, for example, that like we had good players, Adebayor, and they all just left to go elsewhere. They all just left to go City because they knew that Arsenal weren't going to win anything. It's a very different kind of like situation right now with Arsenal. We signed them all down to long-term deals. They're all on like longer contracts now. I just feel like, yeah, like I don't know. I feel like it will happen in the next couple of years, but who knows, right? Who knows, like City could go and win 6 or 7 in a row and you wouldn't be able to, like you wouldn't, if it happens, that happens, man. Like it's, you wouldn't be surprised if that happened either, I guess is what I'm trying to say, but.
Yeah, I agree. And stick on the signings thing. It's funny, isn't it? Because I know it's like an old Wenger cliche sort of thing to say, but Timber's like a new signing next season, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
You know, it's like exactly because whoever we end up signing, if you got to include him in the mix as if it's just it's new input into the squad, which I think is really helpful. Mm. Has you know, I don't know if we may get to do another kind of postseason kind of review and all that kind of stuff, but has what you've seen over the last few months changed your opinion on what we need in the squad in the summer?
Not really. I think the obvious one is, I was gonna say the obvious one is Havertz and just how good the system, how good he looks in the system that we're playing. But I think if there is a elite striker available on the market for kind of reasonable money, when I say reasonable, but whatever the club determine is the right number, then I would still want us to go and get that player. Like, I'm not in the mindset that, oh, we've got Havertz, he scored X number of goals, he's done a really good job through the middle as a striker, so therefore we don't need one. Like, I still think that could potentially be the difference for us to catch City. Other positions, like, I think it's more, for me, it's more about getting... Like, we keep talking about a backup for Saka, right? And that term backup is probably not the right term. I think it just needs to be another forward or wide forward attacking player that could potentially play in a couple of positions, maybe not just like on the right, but maybe could play right or left or could play through the middle as well, or could play like a number 10 or right. But someone that kind of like what we did last summer where we went for... You know, in Havertz and in Rice, we went for Premier League proven players, like guys that have got Premier League experience, that at that age where it's not like they're coming in at 21 and they need a couple of years development. They come in, they go straight into the first team and they're good enough to do that. They're good enough to make an impact. They're good enough to sort of settle straight away and gel straight away. And I feel like we need another player like that. And like there's to be honest, there's probably quite a few Premier League options when I think about, and maybe these are not realistic, but like I think about Jared Bowen. Like, I really like Jared Bowen. I'm not saying we're going to go for him, but, and I'm not saying he's going to want to come to Arsenal to sort of play second fiddle, but you know, that sort of level of player is what I'm looking at in terms of as an attacking option. I think I'd rather see Declan Rice. Obviously, we know that he can play six and he can play an eight. I personally prefer him in the eight. I think there's games where you might need him to drop into the six alongside a Thomas Partey, you know, based on who we've got in the current squad. But I think generally I would prefer to see him in an eight. And I think when you look at the six options, on the assumption that you just can't, I think we have to accept that we can't rely on Partey anymore, like for a 50 game season. So I think a number six is probably going to be needed. And I think that might need to be a ready-made player that comes in as well. And then I think if you say Ramsdale's going to go this summer, then I think we need a backup keeper, obviously. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think we already heard that the club have been looking at options there. And then I think defensively, like this question, like we've not had to worry about it this season. And, you know, touch wood, we don't have to worry about it for a long time. But if there was an injury to Gabriel, if there was an injury to Saliba, you know, our defensive record is unreal this year, and it wouldn't be that without those two at the back. So I don't know how you address that. Like, I know there's options there. I know White can play there. I know Kivior can play there. Tomiyasu can play there. But do you get that same... You don't get that same partnership, right? You don't get that same solidity. You don't get that same kind of two defenders, a left-footed defender and a right-footed defender, like perfectly complementing each other with different attributes that just work so well together. And also, like, you break up a partnership that just has that understanding. Mm. And has just been consistent throughout the season, apart from the first couple of games that Gabriel obviously wasn't in the team. So I don't know how you address that, but I do feel like next season, for example, let's just say Saliba gets injured for 10 games. All right, Ben White can play there, and maybe that is the kind of plan B. Mm, mm-hmm. But you'll also be a little bit worried that, is that, you know, I not that I have any questions over Ben White playing centre back, it's just a big foundation of our success this season has been having that strong defense. And if you take away Saliba, do obviously weaker, but how much weaker is sort of the question. And I wonder if they'll look at that and think Tomiyasu is injured a lot. Zinchenko, like there's big question marks over Zinchenko now. Do we need another defender that maybe can play like what Pep's doing, right? He's buying centre backs and playing them left back and right back or inverted. Like it's just mental. So it feels like, you know, a defender, a top level defender might be needed to play somewhere across that back four. But I am quite concerned that, like I say, if Saliba's out, if Gabriel's out, we don't have the level drops a bit. And I think it's not just the level of the individual player. It's like I say, the pairing is affected severely. So, yeah, I think there's I think in summary, I think there's definitely work to be done in the window. I can't think of anyone that I don't know. Is there any kids coming through, not kids, but youth players coming through. But I think we're kind of past that. I feel like where we are now, we're kind of past that, right? Like, yes, we should still try and blood some younger players, but we're not in a position where we can afford to bring in a Royal Waters for five games and risk dropping points. Like it's the margins are so tight. So I think it's ready made, proven players is what I think we need. But I don't know if we're going to be able to do all of that business in one window because it's a lot. But what do you think is like the most important like priority position? What would you say if you had to pick one or two?
I honestly think the most important for me is a central midfielder to play with Rice. I really think it is. And that's no disrespect to like Jorginho or Partey, to be honest. It's really, for those two, it's a fitness thing, right? Like they both can't play a full season. We can't rely on them like fitness wise. And they both have like really, really good qualities. But I think that they are, especially at this stage in their careers, and especially where we are as a kind of, you know, as a team, I think they are upgradable. You could probably get someone who is better. And the thing is, that again, that's not like prime Partey or prime Jorginho. I wouldn't be saying that. But, you know, where they are right now. And it's a really interesting point you made about like Declan Rice and, you know, you preferring him in the eight. And I can see why you say that. But I always find it interesting when you hear him talk. You know, he said it a number of times, right, where he doesn't just say that he's more comfortable as a six. He says he prefers playing a six.
Mm.
Yeah. And I find that interesting that he chooses those words, because I think he also says, well, but I really also enjoy when I play eight because I get more freedom and I get to do these things, whatever. But like, you know, my preferred position is six. So I don't know what Arteta is thinking. If Arteta is thinking like, I do generally want to play Declan Rice as an eight and I want to get a new six and he's going to have these types of qualities. Like, I don't know. But I think whoever is, if you can get a Declan Rice level player, whatever their skill set is, to play with Declan Rice, like, I really do feel that that's a huge thing for us. Like, I think that effectively could take us to that next level. And I agree with your point about defenders. I think the defender equation is really interesting because people are now talking like this centre-back pairing between Gabriel and Saliba could end up being one for the ages if, you know, they stay fit because of the direction at which they're going. And then I think Arteta has therefore got a decision to make. Does he want to go down the Pep route and say, well, I'm going to just get a load of top quality centre-backs and I'm going to just rotate the shit out of it. And I'm going to have periods, I'm going to have months where I don't play one. Like, you know, and there's going to be injuries and whatever, but I'm not going to have like a setback too or whatever. Will he go down that route? Because if he doesn't go down that route and go with the Gabriel Saliba kind of, you know, whatever, he can't really get a top player to be willing to just sit on the bench as a centre back. He probably needs to use Ben White, you know, if he needs to, and then get another defender who is like, you know, versatile to play in kind of, you know, if any of those other positions. So if it is another kind of Ben White type, I don't know. Because at the end of the day, Timber can also play in some of those positions. Kivior can play centre back, whatever. But I do think ultimately we need another centre back. I do think that anyway, because I think that next season I would like to see us rotate a bit more in cup games and stuff like this, and maybe even group games for the Champions League. I would like to see a little bit of it. Yeah. Just because, you know, you thank your lucky stars that we didn't pick up big injuries to either of their centre backs this season. And with the forward line, I really don't know. I've got myself into a situation with the forward line where I think whatever Arteta does, you know, I'll be like, yeah, fine, cool, go with that. Because I can see pros and cons to everything. I do think that there's someone else who needs to be able to play on the right. Don't get me wrong. So maybe, like, you know, answer my question by saying that I do think there's someone that needs to provide Saka with an alternative option to Saka. But I'm not convinced anymore that we're going to go in and sign someone who we think we can play centre forward. Like, I don't know if we're going to do that.
Market, I think, in general is not fantastic, right?
And exactly.
Numbers have been quoted for people like Osimhen, even though the talk about him has quietened down a bit. But it's a lot. And yeah, and I guess, like, I agree. I was just going to say as well, like, it's easy to forget, even though we're getting reminded of it. We did spend 60, 65 million on Kai Havertz. And I know he's not necessarily strictly a striker and he can play in a few different positions, but ultimately he's an attacking player that we've put a big investment in, a big outlay on. So, I guess, like you say, there's other areas as well. Like you said, midfield, possibly defence, where we're going to have to spend some money. And maybe that just means forwards, attackers, is maybe a bit of a lower priority one, where maybe we don't go for anyone unless, like, a really kind of ridiculous opportunity comes up where it's like a world-class player is available and unexpectedly. But yeah, I'd probably agree with you, mate. Yeah, pretty much. I think, I mean, what will be really interesting is, if you think about it, right, no one expected us to get Kai Havertz last summer. No one saw that transfer coming.
Yeah.
And so who knows? And similarly with Declan Rice, like, yeah, okay, with the links started happening. But even then, like, a lot of, didn't really believe it, right? And then there was news that City were in for him, but thankfully he chose us. So, like, it's just very unpredictable, right? Like, we don't know, obviously. And who knows, like, there might be just like a real left wing signing that comes out of nowhere that shocks us all.
Agreed. So let's wait and see. Anyway, we haven't got this season finished yet. So look, man, big weekend. Everyone's looking forward to it, to maybe in a slightly less way maybe than they were, like, before the Tottenham City game, but still I think now the dust is starting to settle. I think if you look on social media, most Arsenal fans are, like, geared up to be grateful and as optimistic as they can be this weekend. So everyone, thank you for joining us on the podcast. Anyone who was watching live, thank you for the comments, and thank you for everyone who's listened to us recorded. Mice, it's been a pleasure as always, my friend.
Nice one, man. Good stuff, and I'll see you Sunday.
See you Sunday. All right, mate. Bye-bye.
Cheers, guys. Bye.